All right, hi everyone. The elusive cluster outskirts are the topics for today. So let me start with a very small introduction, which none of you needs, but I'll give it to you anyway. Until recently, we actually didn't really know a lot about cluster outskirts. That's because the surface brightness is very low in these parts, and the XMM, Newton, and Chandra backgrounds were actually relatively high, relatively unstable. Those were orbits which were quite elliptical, not protected very well by the Earth's magnetic field. So because of these high particle backgrounds, we didn't really know a lot about the properties of the very faint outskirts. And in fact, Chandra and XMM Newton were normally able to go reliably to measure the temperature out to something like R500, which is about 0.6 of the virial radius. And so if you cube 0.6, I leave that to you, you will end up with the conclusion that if you only know the properties until R500, you actually have two-thirds of the cluster volumes from R500 until the virial radius, which you actually didn't really know much about. In particular, the thermodynamic properties, the entropy, and the temperature and the pressure and so on. So I don't need to motivate that you need to study clusters at large radii, but I will do so. Accurate measurements of clusters out to the virial radius are very important for three reasons. Actually, probably more, but I'm going to mention three. So first of all, you are very interested in how the large-scale structure is currently forming. So how the matter is falling into the cluster, how it gets virialized, how it gets shock-heated as it enters the galaxy cluster potential. So you have the chance to see a large-scale structure as it happens. The other thing is we want to use clusters as cosmological probes. And so if you have to rely on extrapolations as to what happens at large radii, that's a suboptimal condition, and so we would like to calibrate the X-ray mass proxies without relying on these extrapolations out to large radii, and we would like to use the entire cluster volume as a benchmark for hydro simulations. And lastly, galaxies transform as they fall into the cluster as well, and so if you look at the region where the galaxies are falling into the cluster, you can probe how they interact with the ICM at those radii, and you can see whether AGNs are being triggered and things like that. So it's important to study clusters to large radii. Suzaku can help us do it because Suzaku has a much lower instrumental background. It's on a low Earth orbit, and so people have tried to do this indeed with Suzaku. And here are some of the first attempts. Actually, the first published paper was by Thomas Reiprich on ABEL 2204. And here are some other results, the Parkso 745, ABEL 1795. These are the extraction regions from which people got profiles. And recently, there have been a number of other clusters observed as well, which I am not showing here as an image. And let me show you what results people obtained from these radial profiles. For example, here are the temperature profiles for the three clusters which I showed on the previous slide. And so one main conclusion was that the temperature seems to be dropping at large radii, which is something which was expected. But actually what I want to tell you is, let's look at R500. Let's look how far Chandra and XMM were able to probe before this data was taken. So before the Suzaku data at large radii, here's R500 approximately for these clusters. And so what you gain between R500 and R200 is generally basically one, here one and a half data points. So the space between R500, so here we knew what the cluster does, the space between here and R200 is actually not spatially resolved. And the reason for this, there are actually two reasons. The first reason is that Suzaku has a very low angular resolution, and so if this place here spans less than, let's say, 3-4 arc minutes on the sky, then you can't resolve it because you simply don't have the spatial resolution that you need. And the other reason is that you are lacking the statistics. And so to combat both of these things, what you need to do is you need to look at clusters which are very nearby and which are very bright. Nearby to combat the PSF, and bright in order to get the best statistics that you can get. So this just says what I just said. So we need to look at the nearest, brightest clusters with Suzaku to make the best out of the data. And so the Perseus cluster is an ideal target to do this. And here are the observations of the Perseus cluster that I'm going to talk about. We have two mosaics with Suzaku, seven fields going to the northwest, seven to the east, in total 260 kiloseconds of exposure time. And the results that I will show will be from these two arms. I'll tell you about the rest later. And so these results for these two arms of Perseus are now in press, have been accepted for publication in Science, and they will come out next Friday. Right. So results from these two arms. Surface brightness first. Here's the northwestern arm. Here's the eastern arm. Here is our 200 of this cluster. And the images have been rotated so that the center is here. Nothing particularly special about the surface brightness. If you are brave, you might be able to claim that you see emission all the way out to here, but I'm not going to claim that. I'm actually going to show you that we really do see this kind of emission. So the main thing about Suzaku is we are not particularly interested in the surface brightness. We are particularly interested in spectral properties. So we would like to make a spectral analysis of this data set, and we would like to determine the temperature all the way out to the virial radius and possibly beyond. So in the next slide, I show you what we obtained for this. Here are the projected temperature and metallicity profiles that we obtained from the spectral analysis. Here you see the Suzaku data. In blue is the eastern arm. In red is the northwestern arm. The top is temperature. The bottom is metallicity in solar units. And in black, I overplot Jeremy Sanders, the Chandra data published by Jeremy Sanders. These are bins from a 2D map of the Deep Chandra dataset. So the first thing that I want to point out, obviously, is that we have a very nice agreement between the Chandra data and the Suzaku data. So there is no obvious indication for a large offset in calibration or anything like that. The other thing I want to point out is that by combining these two datasets, we actually get a radial profile which spans three decades in radius, which is something we have never seen before for a cluster. This is the most detailed temperature profile that exists right now. And the other thing that I want to say, well, I promised that we would try to actually resolve the profiles between R500 and R200, which, as I've shown you, were not resolved before. So here's our 500, and you see we have five data points to the northwest and six data points to the east to resolve, in which we are resolving the temperature decline beyond our 500. And the other thing I want to point out is to tell you how detailed our profiles are. This data point here spans 0.95 to 1.05 of R200. It's really a very, very small radial range around the virial radius that we are probing. So that's really representative of the properties at the virial radius and nowhere else. Lastly, the metallicity profile is worthy of notice as well. So again, we have a good agreement between the Chandra data points and the Suzaku data points. And you see that we do measure the metallicity all the way out to the virial radius. And this was also not achieved before. So it was very difficult to get the metallicity in this part of the cluster, which is something that this data allows us to do. Right. So these are projected quantities. Let me tell you something about the deprojected profiles. Here you see the electron density, the entropy or pseudo-entropy, and the pressure. And there are several things to notice about these profiles. First of all, let me point out again that they are resolved beyond. First of all, let me point out this feature here in the electron density and in the entropy. Here you have towards the east, the gas has a significantly higher density in this part of the cluster and a significantly lower entropy. The pressure is roughly in agreement. What this is just a cold front. That's the kind of feature that you get when you have a minor merger or a merger which induces sloshing of the intracluster medium. So we do have a minor merger along the eastern axis, which happens to be the long axis of the cluster. The other thing, like I said, is that the profiles are resolved beyond R500. And let's look at let's think about what we expect these profiles to look like and what they actually look like. So first of all, what we have is we have a very shallow decline of the electron density at large radii. So this slope here is actually almost a factor of two shallow compared to what you might expect based on, let's say, numerical simulations. The other thing is the entropy. And we've heard this morning a lot about entropy, and everyone told you that the model that you expect the entropy to follow in the absence of additional sources of heating except just pure gravitational collapse, the entropy is expected to follow this power law, which is a 1.1 index power law. And apart from the eastern cold front here, it does so fairly well until about this radius, which is just past half of R200, and then it becomes flat. So it's significantly lower than what you might expect from this power law model. And the third thing is we have here the pressure model of Monique Arnaud. And if you extrapolate this, then you see that at large radii, the pressure is actually much higher than you might expect from this model. Now, this model agrees quite well. So we're not just contradicting an extrapolation of XMM data. We're also, in principle, this. So the fact that this is here too high means it's also higher than one would expect from SPT. And also, this model seemed to agree quite well with numerical simulations. So it seems something strange that here this data has a relatively higher pressure than one might expect, and it has a lower entropy. All right, now I come to the plot which you have already seen, let's say, twice, and are likely to see again this conference. So let me explain to you what this plot is. Here is the gas mass fraction that you can derive knowing the other thermodynamic quantities. So what we did is we used the northwestern arm because this one is highly relaxed. As I said, along the eastern arm, we have a minor merger going on. So we used the data from the northwestern arm. We assumed hydrostatic equilibrium. And we fitted an NFW model to the underlying dark matter mass, or the underlying total mass, let's say. And this is the gas mass fraction profile that we obtained. Now, I'm not going to jump straight to here, but I want to first point your attention to this part right here, the, let's say, inner or intermediate radii in Perseus. And in blue here, you see data points from Chandra, obtained in Steve Allen's cosmological work. And you see that our Perseus measurements go straight through the middle of the scatter. So there's nothing weird about the Perseus cluster at these intermediate radii. Further out, what I plot here are results from a numerical simulation by Young and collaborators. And here is just the gas mass fraction predicted by this simulation. Now, I remind you that in simulations, they are actually able to measure the gas mass fraction directly without any additional complications due to clumping. So this is just the amount of gas simply by the amount of total matter from that simulation. So you see a very good agreement with this data until 0.4, 0.5 of, let's say 0.4 of R200. Right. Now, before we get here, let's look at this data point right there. This horizontal black line here is what you would expect to have with the current CMB measurements of the baryon fraction, accounting for 12% of the baryons being in stars. So this is the baryon fraction from the CMB. This is if you subtract 12% of baryons being in stars. You expect the hot gas fraction to be along this black line. And actually, that's exactly what you get. Okay? So in the Perseus cluster, we don't see an evidence that you don't have enough baryons at R500 as compared to what the number of baryons you expect to have from the CMB plus accounting for the stars. So it's been said several times before in this conference that we don't know if the baryons are there. Some baryons might be missing from the clusters. In Perseus, that's not the case. Like I said, Perseus doesn't seem to be strange at smaller radii. And so when you have the exquisite data at large radius to have this measured very accurately, we don't really expect that there are missing baryons in clusters. That's all I'm going to say about this particular issue. But this is the conclusion that we can draw from this plot. Right. Now let me come to the data out there. So as you go beyond R500, the data starts to significantly exceed the expectations, and it goes above even the cosmic baryon fraction mean. And as we have already heard, the most likely cause for this is simply that your density is being biased because the gas is clumpy. And so if you have a non-zero variance of the electron density, when you measure the average of the electron density square, which is what you get in the Bremsstrahlung emission, this will be bigger than simply the average of the electron density, everything squared, because the variance is non-zero. So you're overestimating your density, and that causes the F-gas to be unphysically high. And then you can ask yourself, by how much do I need to overestimate the electron density? So assuming, for example, that this green curve, which is from numerical simulations, is my model for what the true gas mass fraction actually does, I can say, by how much do you need to overestimate the density in order to get the difference between these red points and the green curve? And that is what is plotted here in the bottom panel. And you see you need to overestimate the density by factors of between 2 and 3. And the other thing you can say, well, I don't really trust the simulation, so tell me another model. So what you can do is you can say, well, we believe the data points until they go above a certain threshold. So this solid black curve here is if you say, well, here there is no clumping, but as soon as the data goes above this black line, there is clumping. So we assume the model is here there is no clumping, and above everything above this line, you must calculate some clumping for these data points, and that's here. And the absolute least amount of clumping that you can have is if you say, okay, whenever you go above, so let's discount the stars, because maybe we don't know how many stars there are. So if you go, the minimum amount of stars you can have is zero, although that's very small that's not very realistic, but let's say the minimum amount of stars you can have is zero. So when your hot gas fraction goes above the baryon fraction from the CMB, then you absolutely need to have clumping, and that gives you this amount of clumping, which is with the dashed line. So there needs to be clumping in the outskirts of clusters. The amounts are not very sensitive to the model that you use. And this has important implications, for example, if you compare X-ray and SZ studies at large radii, because the SZ doesn't depend on n square, it depends on n times t, so you expect to see some differences there. All right. So what happens when you correct for the clumping? So we have here a model for how clumped the gas is. When you correct for when you correct the density by that factor, what happens to the thermodynamic profiles? All of a sudden, your electron density becomes steeper. These are, so the data points show exactly the same profiles that I've shown you before, and just this red line is what you should pay attention to. And so when you correct the red data points for gas clumping, then you get this red line, so the electron density becomes steeper. The entropy starts to follow this power law much closer than before, so it doesn't flatten out anymore. And the pressure actually follows the model of the universal pressure profile of Monte Carlo quite well. So clumping is a very nice way to correct both the problems that we had in the entropy, the flattening, and also the discrepancies in the pressure, where these data points used to be too high. So it's actually a very nice explanation for everything that we were, let's say, puzzled about in the thermodynamic profiles. Needless to say, it will be very interesting to measure this along different azimuthal directions or in different clusters and see if this conclusion holds up. And we will have a chance to do so. So here are the two arms of Perseus that I have shown you so far. These two arms have already been observed last August. We're working on the data analysis, and these four arms have been accepted, and they will be scheduled for the upcoming AO. So we will get eight different directions in Perseus to check the conclusions about clumping that I have just talked about. Right, so I'm going to move a bit away from Perseus and from Suzaku, and I just want to spend the last 3 minutes talking a bit about another cluster and actually another X-ray telescope. Here's a Virgo cluster, which has been observed to the virial radius with XMM Newton. Now, if I make an opinion poll, then probably you won't really believe that you can measure the properties of this cluster with XMM Newton to the outskirts. For the reasons I've said before, the background of XMM Newton is actually much higher than Suzaku, but there's a catch, and the catch is that the signal from Virgo comes, most of the signal is in a very low energy band. So most of the signal comes between, let's say, 1 and 2 keV, because this cluster is relatively cool. If you try to do that with another cluster, you probably have much harder time. But because the signal from Virgo is in the 1 to 2 keV band, that's where the signal is basically the highest above the background. So you still get a good signal to background ratio. So here's the image of this mosaic of XMM pointings of the Virgo cluster going to the north. So this is this strip right here. And these results have also been published. And let me just show you two slides about what results we obtained for the thermodynamic profiles. Here are the data points for the entropy, which I showed you before for the Perseus cluster. I am overplotting the entropy profile in cyan, which we obtained for the Virgo cluster. So we see, again, a good agreement with this power law, and then the data flattening out. And it starts to flatten out actually quite a ways before, earlier than the Perseus data. So these data start to diverge from this power law in Virgo already at 0. Let's say, well, 0.3 or 0.4 of R200. The pressure is a bit too noisy, but it generally follows this the same trend as the Perseus data. So the entropy flattens out very early. Let me point out again the radius here, about 0.3 of R200. Let's look at the temperature and metallicity, which we are able to measure in Virgo. So what you need to know is, so here's the temperature profile. This here is exactly the same radius where the entropy flattens. So at this radius, you have a sharp drop in temperature. You have a sharp drop in metallicity. Here's a spectrum of Virgo at the virial radius. And you see where most of the signal comes from. It comes from the iron L bump around 1 keV. Now, if you have clumping, and if clumping is responsible, as was the case of Perseus, if clumping is responsible for the entropy break, and if the most of your signal is determined by the iron L line, then most of this, the iron L is much more susceptible to bias in both measuring the metallicity and measuring the temperature, because the temperature is also can be determined from the shape of the iron L line. And so we think, because clumping is setting in, and we see that in the entropy break, because clumping is setting in here in a cluster which has this type of spectrum, that also causes the temperature and the metallicity to be biased. So we interpret all these three profiles, the entropy, temperature, and metallicity, as evidence that clumping is also setting in the Virgo cluster. I'm out of time, so I'll put up my conclusions, and I'm very happy to answer your questions. Thank you.
That's looks like nice work, Aurora. Maybe you said this and I missed it, but the systematic errors from background and foreground emission are going to be significant in the outer regions. So do those error bars include systematic errors?
No, but...
So is the result of the excess gas fraction then robust to the systematic errors?
Absolutely. So here you see for the Perseus data, the systematics in the cosmic X-ray background, here is by changing several different parameters of the background and foreground within the uncertainties. We estimated the uncertainties from ROSAT and also from the Suzaku data goes significantly outside of R200. So we can also use the Suzaku data beyond R200 and also the ROSAT data to get a feeling what the variance in the background parameters might be. And so here are the statistical errors. And with the lines, I show the best fits when you vary different background parameters. And you see that in most cases, you get variations which are less than the 1 sigma statistical errors. This is not the case for Virgo. So in Virgo, actually, the errors due to systematics are much larger, but the conclusions are still robust. It's just the errors, the systematics would be bigger than 1 sigma statistical in Virgo. But the conclusions are robust regarding the flattening of the entropy.
Okay. Can you show the X-ray spectrum of Perseus outside R500? Because you talked a lot about that.
So I don't have a best fit spectrum, but this is the CXB model. Simply the CXB model, and that is the spectrum. So here you see the residuals above the CXB model, which is what is being fitted with a thermal component. So you see an excess, certainly all the way until 2.5 keV, and slightly smaller excess above the background, above 2.5 keV. And so you can easily imagine that a thermal component around 2.5, 3 keV will fit these residuals relatively well.
We don't really have much time left. Save your questions for the discussion section.